Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2019. Lecture 10, delivered on February 20, 2019. The title of this lecture is Parameters of the Time Value of Money.
Tonight, Parameters of the Time Value of Money. Now, to begin it, I want to just do another basic problem with you, just to remind you of the calculator routines that you need to be able to do this kind of stuff. So we'll bring up the virtual calc TI-83 here, and you can follow along. You borrow $150,000 on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage with an APR of, let's say, 5.99%. What are your monthly payments? And again, this is just what I've already done, and I'm doing one again. First of all, to remind you of the keystrokes, and also to take it a little further and show you some more little calculator things you can do that give you real and valuable information. So in this one, apps, finance, TVM solver. And as I've said, don't do calculations on your own. We've got 12 months per year times 30 years. Don't use enter. Just go down to the I percent. And the I percent is 5.99. Remember that in financial calculators, you don't use the decimal version. In real arithmetic and algebra, you would. But we have 5.99% divided by 12. We toggle down. Now the principal value, the price value, the present value. Always a present value. You start with the negative sign, not the minus operator, the negative sign, $150,000. Now you make sure that the FV is zero, and for loans, and certainly in this class and in real life, it's always going to be the PMT end, not beginning. Okay? Now we just toggle down to the PMT, and we hit alpha enter, which gives you the green solve. Alpha solve. You've got $898.36 a month payments. $898.36. Nothing difficult about it at all. Sure as heck is easier than looking up tables, or certainly by doing it with a formula. So there's the first round, just a simple figure out the amount of a loan. Well, that's nice. Okay. Now, we can also do a few other little tricks. Now, to get out, you hit second quit. One thing we might be interested in is the effective yield on this loan. Would be 1 plus 0.0599. Remember, we're doing actual algebra here, so you have to use the decimal. Divided by 12 to the 12th power minus 1. So this will tell us the effective yield on the loan. And if we crank that, open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.0599 divided by 12, close the parenthesis, y to the x, 12 minus 1, 6.16%. So the effective yield is actually going to be obviously higher. That's nice. Now, let's talk about something here. When you do use the time value of money, the numbers that you put in there, the calculator is going to remember if you need them for something else. Let's ask a couple of questions. Okay, you took out a loan for 30 years for $150,000. How much do you still owe, let's say, after 10 years? Now, remember that in the... We actually don't talk about years. We really want to know months. So that would be 120 months because we were doing everything in months in the TVM solver. Now, this time we're going to go apps, finance. And if you go down far enough, you'll see on 9, BAL. That will tell you the balance. We're going to hit enter, and that takes us back to the main screen, BAL, open parenthesis. And if you key in 120, that would be 10 years. And the result is going to be how much you still owe, your balance, 10 years later. Let's look at it. Holy cow. You still owe $125,495.04. Oh my goodness. So if I take my original amount that I borrowed, $150,000 10 years before, plus second answer, I paid off only $24,504.96 of that loan in 10 years. You're still sitting on a very large amount. 10 years out, you've paid off only less than $25,000 of $150,000 after 10 years. Worse yet, let's see how much interest you paid over those 10 years. Apps, finance, go down far enough and you'll see on A, sum of interest. Enter. Now here, you're saying how much interest did I pay from month 1, comma, to month 120, close parentheses. Ho! $83,298.44 just in interest for the on the first 10 years. Now that should sober you up a little bit right there, for heaven's sakes. And that's one of the problems, you see, is that if I were to look at the profile of the principal amount against time, with 30 years out here, and for this one, $150,000, which is where you started, the balance, it's going to look very much like that. In the first years of the loan, you are paying down the balance very slowly. It's only in the out years that you begin to really get equity in. Now, I want you to think about it this way. This creates a problem for the borrower because when the loan starts, your equity value Well, let me just put it this way. Value of the house. Value of the asset, let's just put it that way, okay? Well, that's all well and good unless we go into a recession. When housing prices begin to fall, even a fall of 10% is going to make it so that the value of the asset is less than what you owe on it. Do you see that there? We say that you are upside down on the loan if housing prices fall. And in 10 years, you could very well have that house fall by $25,000 in a serious recession, which means that you are going to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of home owners who have mortgages who are going to be upside down. And if you owe more than you have value, equity in a home, you have a very good incentive to default. Why would you keep paying on something that's not worth what you are, owning? It's just not logical. So that's why you will see these default rates go sky high in recessions when housing prices begin to collapse. And then you have the bank joining in, crying crocodile tears, because they'll take the home away from the owners, and they'll say, this is how much they owed, and this is how much value we took from them, a lesser amount. So we lose money. Isn't that tragic? Actually, no, it's not. Most home owners who are borrowers don't realize that you're not going to pay $898.36 a month. You're going to pay a higher amount because you are actually paying for an insurance policy for the bank that will cover them on the difference between the asset value and the loan value. It's called the Mortgage Assurance Guarantee Corporation, MAGIC. These homeowners who have their homes taken away, they don't realize that they were paying insurance to cover the bank if they had to default. So they get the house taken away from them, and the bank comes out clean. Interesting thing that most people don't know this, that they're paying insurance to protect the bank from their own default. And so when they have that house taken away from them, they lose everything. The bank loses nothing. And it's even worse than that, because by law, a borrower, once the mortgage goes to a level below a loan-to-value ratio of 80% or less, you don't have to make that payment as the borrower. You can tell the bank to stop collecting that premium from you. Almost no one knows that, and the bank sure as hell isn't going to tell you that. So we have many, many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of borrowers who, through this 80% loan to value, they're still paying an insurance premium that will almost never have to perform. And the bank just keeps the money. And the magic keeps the money. The premiums are not, you don't have, the bank cannot require you to pay them, but the bank is not required to tell you that you don't have to pay them once your loan to value ratio goes below 80%. So in the example that I gave you here, at the 10-year mark, your loan-to-value ratio would be 125,495.04 divided by, okay, let's say that the house held its value at 150. They're not quite where they could cancel the insurance. Probably another 3 or 4 years they would be. But they're coming close to a loan-to-value that is below 80%. So the magic should eventually, the borrower should eventually be able to tell the bank, stop collecting the premium. But the bank is sure not going to tell you it's time you stop paying that payment. So there's an interesting little thing right there. Something to think about. A couple of things to think about is, one is, you when you borrow for these long hauls like this, it really takes a long time for you to gather any meaningful equity in the property. And that's why it's probably not a good idea for you to be, unless housing prices are going up aggressively, which they do in a good, in a great economy, they'll go up. It's probably not a good idea for you to try to flip a house for quite a while. So plan on keeping a house long enough for you to build up some semblance of decent equity in it, really. So that's the first thing that you want to, first way that we can see some practicality in consumer finance from a class like this. And another, now let me show, let me take you on another trip here. By the way, with new cars, it's even worse. Because when you pull a new car off the lot, it loses value as soon as you drive that car away. It just, boom, like that. You know, it could lose 15, 20% of its value just driving it off the lot. So you're upside down immediately on a car, on a new car. Almost always, you're upside down right away on a new car. So you keep that in mind, that you better not be planning to get dump that car for a while. You better be, get a car that you like. And that's something that I tell a lot of people. Well, don't, yeah, you're going to have to get a car that's not the greatest car in the world, but you get a car that you actually like. Get enough accessories on it that you're not going to hate getting into the car. Anyway, let me try another one. Let me show you another thing. Now, credit cards. Credit cards are notorious for having interest rates that we technically call stupid high. Your credit card has an APR of 19.99%. Okay? Madam, do you like stuff?
Yes.
Do you like to shop? I am a shopping hoe, and I'll admit it. Amazon? Well, hell, there's got to be something there to buy today. I mean, it's just our nature. Yes, it's bad to buy and buy, but hell, it's on sale. You, madam, didn't get the grade that you were hoping for in this finance class that you took. So how do you console yourself? You shop. That's what I do, you know. You know, my doctor told me you have 2 years to live. Okay, let's go to the mall, Woodfield Mall. I'm going to die? Who are they going to collect from? My corpse? My cats? You buy $2,000 worth of stuff on your credit card. You want to pay this off in 2 years. What will your monthly payments be? This is where the interesting part is about to come in. What would your payments be? Well, this one's an easy one. Monthly payments, it's a TVM, time value of money problem. Apps, finance, TVM solver, 12 monthly payments for 2 years, and an APR of 19.99%, divided up into 12 periods per year. You spent $2,000, classic loan, go down to payment, alpha, solve. Your payments would be $101.78 a month. But that's not what you're going to pay. That credit card company is going to write a minimum payment that you are supposed to make. Let's say that their minimum payment is $45. You have a choice of paying $101.78, or they said, well, it's okay if you pay $45. Yeah, we're all going to pay that $45. So I change the PMT to $45, and then I go back up. Let's see how long it's going to take you to pay off that $2,000. Go back up to N, alpha, solve in months. Holy mother of our Lord, 81.62 months. Quitting 81 months divided by 12 months a year, that's 6 3/4 years. In other words, 6 years and 9 months it will take you to pay off that one shopping spree. Well, they're just being nice to us. They don't want us to suffer big payments that cut off our ability to go to Red Robin and eat cheeseburgers and have all-you-can-drink root beer floats. Sometimes I'll go there and just stand in the window of Red Robin and look at the people. That's right, bro. You eat that cheeseburger. Eat it all. Yeah, that's right. Anyway. Where the hell was I? Okay. Why are they doing this? Why are they being nice to us? Why? Well, yeah, well, there's that, yes. Yeah. You got it. They will collect that 20% interest for 6 3/4 years instead of 2 years. They'll make it so easy for you to pay. In fact, we have found examples of minimum payments where in order to pay off the balance of credit cards, it would take 20 years. And people would just do it because they don't think about the interest. They're just being chewed alive. They're being bled of their ability to do other things with money for all those years. In this case, you're paying an interest. You're paying 20% interest for 4 3/4 years more than you would if you got it taken care of and beat it down and paid it off. In fact, it's an interesting thing. And you'll see this with other, I'm just bringing up PayPal as an example. PayPal, as soon as I pay off my balance, they up my credit limit every time. Okay, you're now ready to go into the big league where I couldn't pay off the balance if I wanted to. Pisses me off. Anyway, but it is nice. I can buy some real good stuff with what I've got now. Anyway, okay, now let's do one quick thing here, just real quick. 1 plus 0.1999 over 12 to the 12th power minus 1. So let's just see what the effective rate is on this sucker. Open parenthesis, 1 plus 0.1999 divided by 12, close the parenthesis, y to the x 12 minus 1. Notice how I do things in one straight keystroke sequence. Now, I don't break things up if I possibly can help it. Enter. Oh, you're actually paying 21.93%. That's your effective yield. Literally, it used to be illegal to charge interest rates this high. Now we do it all the time. And in fact, I'm going to show you that these are actually very modest interest rates compared to some interest rates, which can run at effective yields over 2,000%. And nothing will be done about them because it's not illegal anymore to charge whatever you want in interest, as it used to be. So there you are. That's sobering, isn't it? It's one of those things that kind of staggers us that people do this, but part of it is, not all of it, but part of it is that people are not taught basic finance. A 240 class is not something normal people take. Yes, you're abnormal. You're in here and you're now learning what it means to take on loans, what you're committing to, what it means when you cut yourself slack and make the minimum payment instead of the more hurtful big payment, that you're just simply giving away part of your future by doing that. But still, you know, it was great stuff I bought. Let me take this around another angle. Now, this is a place, a dark place. A place you might not want to visit because you were already there and you lived through it and you don't want to do that again. I'm talking about high school algebra. What if you were told that the number 5 equals 2 to the x power? Now, solving for x when it's an additive or a multiplicative or a divisor, that's easy stuff. But this one was the one that was a little bit more robust algebra. And truth be told, the inventor of this algebraic thing was hailed as a brilliant man in the time that he did it. But he ended his life crazy, so crazy that he thought that the end of the world was going to come in the year 1700, and he believed that the Pope was the Antichrist. And so it's kind of like we don't really mention him much anymore because he ended up being a crazy mofo. But if you remember how this works, to solve for x in a power as an exponent, you take a logarithm of each side. Because you can do that in algebra, as long as you do the same thing to both sides of an equation, as long as you're not divided by zero, it's allowed. Anything you want. If I feed this one a cheeseburger and I feed this one a cheeseburger, it's fine. All you have is cheeseburger algebra, and cheeseburger algebra is not a crime, man. But with logarithms, and I use the natural logarithms, there's an odd thing that you can do. Exponents on the argument of the log can be brought out to the front as a multiplier. You know, this brings back memories. I taught algebra and remedial algebra for years and years at Ohio State and other places. And I made so many mistakes when I did it that it's a wonder that the universe is even still working now. But now, this log of 5 and this log of 2 are just weird numbers. They're just irrational numbers. So I can divide both sides by the log of 2, and there is my x. Now you're saying, all right, now what does this have to do with finance? How long would it take to double $5,000 in an account that paid 3.5% compounded quarterly? Well, if I remember right, the future value is the present value times 1 plus r to the t power. So what we have here is kind of an odd thing. We could say 5,000, our future value, is 2,000. Well, I'm sorry, 10,000, wow, is our now value, present value, 5,000. Times 1 plus 0.035 over 4 to the 4 times the number of quarters. Looks like a logarithmic problem to me. The first thing you always do, and I'm sure someone's already told you this, but this is my version that I taught algebra. Strip off the numbers going from the easiest to the hardest. So if there's something adding, strip it off first by minusing it on both sides. If there's something multiplying, strip it off next by dividing both sides. So in this case, that 5,000 is my most vulnerable piece right now. So I'm just going to honk that over 10,000 over 5,000 equals 1 plus 0.035 over 4 to the 4t. Which you'll notice that 10,000 over 5,000 is 2. So in other words, I really didn't need to start with 5,000, 10,000. I said double. So you could have just started with any old numbers at all, and it would have immediately reduced to a 2 on the left side. If I'd said triple, you just put a 3 there. In other words, what we're doing is independent of the starting value. As long as I know what my multiplier is, okay, how long will it take to turn your money in 5 times as much? I put it a 5. Forget about the actual values. So now we're ready to do some logarithmic fun. We're going to take the natural log of 2 is the natural log of 1 plus 0.035 over 4 to the 4t. And then we can do that trick. A power inside of a log can be stripped out to the front. So the log of 2 is actually 4t times 1 plus 0.035 over 4. Whoops, natural log. I screwed up there. I didn't write the natural log in there. Now again, strip off the vulnerable pieces. I've got a 4 multiplying, and I've got a log. This is just a number. It's just a weird number. That's all it is. It's no fancy thing. And that's something that blows people away in advanced math. Oh my God, look at all those friggin' symbols and all that. They're friggin' numbers. Stop worrying about them. Just treat them like anything else. So in other words, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to strip off that 4 and that natural log of 1 plus 0.035 over 4. And I've got my t sitting there waiting to be solved. Now, you got to be a little careful about parentheses and all of that when you calculate this. I'm forever forgetting a parenthesis somewhere, and then I'm fussing because my results look so stupid. But let me see if I can do this without making a mistake, okay? I got the natural log, the ln 2, close that parenthesis there, divided by, now I'm going to open up parenthesis to trap the entire denominator. This first parenthesis is just a trap to hold the whole denominator in a place. Now I'm going to do the natural log. Well, actually, no, what I'll do first is I'll do that 4 times the natural log. Now that opens up so I can, a parenthesis, so I can do 1 plus 0.035 divided by 4, close parenthesis. Now I close the parenthesis again. Most of you have never seen a trick. Have you ever run into a problem where you got so many parentheses you didn't know what to do next in an Excel sheet or something like that? There's an old trick for no, it doesn't prove that you've got it right, but it proves that you got the right number of parentheses. Watch. Open 1, close 1. That's 1, 0. 1, 2, 1, 0. You should actually always go back to 0. If you go back to 0 in your count, you know you've got the right number of parentheses. This is really useful in Excel when you've got these monster parentheses, parentheses, parentheses. You can actually count your way to make sure you've got the right number. Again, watch. Opens are one up, closes are one down. So I've got 1, 0, 1, 2, 1, 0. I might not have them in the right place, but I know I've got the right number of parentheses running. Were you ever shown that trick? It's a, like I said, in Excel, it's a lifesaver when you've got parentheses on parentheses on parentheses. Anyway, oh, hey, there we go, 19.89 years. Now, one last stupid pet trick. Well, I don't want to know decimal years. I want years, months, and days. Okay. You do, huh? Subtract off the whole part, 19. So we have 19 years, and now we've got a 0.8907. So there are 12 months a year, so times 12. So we got 10 months. 19 years, 10 months. Okay. Strip off the 10. And we got 0.6886. So what we can do now is there's an average of 30 days in a month. 20 days. 19 years, 10 months, and 20 days. You ever seen this before? Oh, well, I want hours. Fine. Strip off the 20 days. 0.6681. Okay, 24 hours in a day. 15 hours. Well, I want minutes. Fine. Minus 15. Or if I'm fatiguing you, tell me to stop. So now I can get it down, and there are 60 minutes in an hour. Whoops, I blew it. 0.8. I was on a roll there for a while, good people. 5706. 186. Oops. Times 60. 50 minutes. And 40 seconds. That gets a little bit stupidly tedious. But there you go. Anyway, if you need, this is quarterly compounding. So you'd probably want to take it down to months. You'd say, well, what was it? Like, how many years was that? 19 years and something. But anyway, that's how you find the T, is just use the natural logarithms. You've got a couple of problems, well, you would have in your homework set if it had been not been screwed up. But those are kind of like common problems. It's not that hard to do. You just take natural logs and you've got your answer for these. One last thing is that you can actually shape your investments and your analysis in many different ways. When I go into this time value of money solver, I want to show you something. I'm sorry. Let me do this. Let me come out of here. Apps, finance. Now, if you go down through this list, you'll see that you could actually individually solve for different things. I always just use the TVM solver, but we'll use NPV and IRR later. You've seen me use balance, principal, and interest. Here's an interesting one, is the effective rate. You don't have to use that formula that I gave you. I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but it's not that hard to find the effective rate on a loan. I just told you how to do it. Do you see it? I mean, that formula right there, you know, for effective rate on a loan, well, you can do it actually on your TI. I wasn't going to show you that one first. I wanted you to see the real version. In other words, you go to the EFF toggle and choice on the menu, finance menu, and the first thing you put in is the interest rate as a percentage, because it's a financial function, comma the number of compoundings per year. Isn't that nice? If you can accomplish these problems, you can certainly do my quiz tonight. I mean, I don't even do the stuff with the logs tonight. But on Monday of midterm exam week, which is a week from today, which is a week from this coming week, the math is going to be what I'm showing you here in class. This is what it's going to be. Probably about 12 questions of the 40 will be nothing but straight up math, 12 to 15 questions. If you can have a calculator and do what I'm doing here, you've gotten through one of the hard parts of a finance test. And especially if you can do this kind of little trick, if I ask you for an effective rate, you don't even have to do algebra. You just have to know where to get to it on a calculator. So there you are. I am providing you with everything you need to be a finance major. They call me Pizza Hut because I deliver. Right? That's right. I set that one up. And I did a damn good job, too.
Now, let me give you a quiz.